Thousands gathered on the campus of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill last night to remember the three Muslim students who were shot dead Tuesday by a gunman who'd posted anti-religious messages on Facebook. The victims were two sisters, 19-year-old Razan Muhammad Abu Salah and 21-year-old Yusor, and Yusor's husband, 23-year-old Dia Barakat. Yusor and Dia were married in December. Photos from their wedding day were shared widely on social media yesterday. The suspected gunman, Craig Stephen Hicks, turned himself into the police and has been charged with three counts of first-degree murder. Hicks had frequently posted anti-religious comments on his Facebook page and was a supporter of the group Atheists for Equality. On Wednesday, police said the killings resulted from a dispute over parking space. But Muhammad Abu Salah, Razan and Yusor's father, described the killings as a hate crime. He also accused the media of propagating anti-Muslim sentiment.
They're both, my daughters wear the scarf. There is not a single week that our daughters don't share with us their fear of walking down the street because of what the media is saying about us. Inflammatory media all the time. Inflammatory media all the time. They pick up the bad apples and they magnify the picture and they dwell on it day and night. We're sad, we're distraught, we're shocked, we're angry, we feel we're treated unjustly. This is uncalled for. We heard from the media, not from the media, from the police folks that each one of these children had a bullet in the head. This was an execution style. This was a hate crime from a neighbor our children spoke about. They were uncomfortable with. He came to their apartment more than once, condescending, threatening, and despising and talking down to them.
Dia Barakat's sister, Suzanne, described the three students as gems of their communities.
Dia, at 23, a second-year dental student at UNC, was well known for his all-embracing kindness, lightheartedness, dedication to community service, love for basketball, and anything Steph Curry. Yusuf, 21, who was on track to join him at UNC Dental in the fall, matched his gentle demeanor, had a calming presence, and she and Liat found in one another a kindred spirit. Razan, at only 19, was tremendously gifted, studying architecture, incredibly creative, giving, generous, and a loyal friend. They were gems of their communities and left a lasting impression on the people around them.
Craig Stephen Hicks had posted a picture of his gun on Facebook. The killings in Chapel Hill sparked international outcry. The hashtag Muslim Lives Matter spread across social media. A community Facebook page was set up Wednesday in memory of the three victims called Our Three Winners. To talk more about the killings, we're joined by two guests in North Carolina. In Raleigh, Amira Atta is with us, a childhood friend of Yusor Abu Salah. Her piece for Fusion.net is headlined, "My Best Friend Was Killed, and I Don't Know Why." In Durham, Omid Safi is with us, director of Duke University's Islamic Studies Center. He is former professor at UNC Chapel Hill. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Our condolences to you, to the whole community. Amira, I want to begin with you to describe your best friend, Yusor Abu Salah, her sister, to talk about what has taken place and what we should know about them.
Okay, well, I'm going to start about what we should know about them. So Yusor is my best friend. I hate to say was just because it's hard to accept this. So I want to keep on living as if she's still by my side. Yusor kept me strong through so many things. She was always helpful. She gave me and all of our friends a lot of advice and support. She encouraged us and she was an inspiration. She was an inspiration to me. Her father is an inspiration to me. I actually want to follow his career path. Ever since I was little, I was determined to become like him. I loved his job. I loved what he does. And he also encouraged me to do that as well. And we've been in school all like together all of our life. Since third grade, I met her when she moved to Raleigh from Clinton, North Carolina. And we were just inseparable since. We went to the same elementary school, middle school, high school, and university.
And you saw her sister Razan, 19 years old, her little sister.
Yes, Razan. So Razan, since I was best friends with Yosud, of course, Razan was always with us growing up. She was always playing with us. She may not have had the best roles in all of our games, but she was included. She was lucky that she was included because we were older. So we kind of, try to boss her around a little as much as we could, or as much as she would let us. But then when she grew up, she was smarter than us, so it didn't work anymore. Razan is, she's so kind and loving, and she's just really cute. Like, there's just something about her that's just adorable. Like, she kind of makes your heart melt a little bit. She loved Yosud so much. And yesterday, when we were at their parents' home, I was thinking to myself, like, you know, we're standing in the kitchen, and we've been there so many times, and it brings back so many memories. Like, I can see Razan sitting at the end of the table, and she also always just sit kind of at the head of the table. And I can always just see her always studying. She was always reading. She has like this huge library in her room. Like, you wouldn't believe how many books this girl reads. And she's just a very smart young girl that had just an amazing mind. Her thought process was amazing. She loved her family so much. She loved Yosud a lot. And I just can't imagine if Yosud was to leave this world and Razan didn't, I don't think Razan would have been able to survive without her sister, because they were so connected together. So I'm kind of looking at it, last night I was thinking about it, it is kind of a blessing that they happened to pass all together, because they all needed each other so much. And I don't think Razan would have been able to do it without it, and vice versa, without her, and vice versa.
Was when she was over and a few other girls with hijabs were over. So maybe in his mind, like, the Muslims are coming, they're here. And it's a subtle thing, like, these foreigners are here, and I might be a liberal on other issues, like marriage equality, and he is on his Facebook page, but there's certain things that rub you the wrong way, perhaps, and have built and escalated.
And Dean, you know, you point out that, you know, some of this rhetoric has been on both sides of the aisle, you know, and you know, you cite Bill Maher, but obviously most consider him a liberal, you know, on that side of the aisle, but clearly he's, you know, angered a lot of Muslims with his comments. I mean, and this guy, as you say on his Facebook page, he wrote, "Some call me a gun-toting liberal, others call me an open-minded conservative." So
he's a complex guy. He definitely, if you look, to be completely fair, if you look at his Facebook page, and I looked at it, he likes mostly progressive causes. He likes progressive TV shows and commentators. He's very adamant about marriage equality. He's an avid, devout atheist. It's a complex person who I think that if you asked him before this shooting, do you hate Muslims, he would tell you no. But at the same time, you live in a climate like in North Carolina, where just a year ago they passed an anti-Sharia law legislation, where there were no Muslims trying to impose Islamic law. But so the Republicans passed that, and while they passed those laws, there's always demonizing of Muslims going on. Like, they're coming together, so they want to impose their law on our country and make America some Muslim country. You cannot be immune to this if you have no counter-narrative. You know, to me, this man is a sort of a test case on someone could be liberal on certain issues, but gets impacted by hearing horrible things that there's no counter narrative.
Well, and again,
hear another side to it. And your father made a good point. I mean, these three people were all shot in the head. They were executed. I mean, it's not a normal crime of passion.
That's so not a normal parking dispute. Yeah.
No, I mean, to go in there, he walks in their house and shot all three in the head. It's kind of you know, there's something more going on. The father really thinks they were, it was premeditated. We don't know if that's true or not. But there was definitely the prior history between them having problems. And the girl I spoke to, Amira, said when she heard about the shooting, she knew exactly who did it. Yeah. She had
well,
no doubt it was him.
But the other thing is, you say, you know, when you talk about, like, you know, what, you know, bipartisan kind of rhetoric. I mean, you said he was an avowed atheist that expressed contempt for all faiths, including Islam. Had posted passages from famed atheist Richard Dawkins, liked Sam Harris's Facebook page, both of which have spewed hateful comments about Islam in the past. I mean, and as you say, Dawkins has condemned the attack on Twitter. That's not. I think it's important that you point out. You're not saying Bill Maher, Sam
right.
Harris, or anybody has blood on their hands.
No,
but you're saying this is that.
I'm not saying
right.
blood on the hand type of thing. That's not yeah. like that. This man was pushed to the breaking point. And the question in my mind, frankly, I think people in the Muslim communities, what if you've gotten his gun and shot three, you know, white Christian people? You know, that's a question. Or three just people who are not Muslim, who didn't look brown and didn't wear hijab. The two women who were killed wore hijabs. What if he killed them or not? And does that is that part of the component of what motivated him? I think there's part to it. In my heart, and I could be wrong, but this is my view, if they were not Muslim, they'd be alive today. There may have been an altercation. He may have went and yelled at them again and screamed at them. But to get the gun and kill them, you know, I really see in the media and the narrative by some on the right is that we're not legitimate Americans, that we're a threat. We've had John Bennett, an Oklahoma State representative, literally say Muslim Americans are a cancer that should be cut out of this country. This is part of cutting us out of the country. It's killing us. This is part of it. And then I'm not saying he agreed with that view, but you can't help it. That's all you hear is this drumbeat of negative images that Muslims are not only an other, they're a threat.
Professor Omid Safi as well about what's occurred. Professor Safi, could you explain to us what your response to the way in which the media has been covering these tragic deaths?
Thank you, Nermeen. Thank you, Amy. It's obviously a very heavy time for all of us here in North Carolina and in the country. I think the initial response of the community here has been to ask the media focus to be on the lives of these three beautiful, young, idealistic, passionate people, these three young Muslims who connected the suffering here in America to the suffering around the world, who work in the inner cities of North Carolina, as well as working with Syrian refugees in Turkey, working with Palestinians and others, rather than simply keeping the focus on this vile murderer and the horrific act of an execution-style murder. And then the other aspect that we have seen has been the request of the family and indeed the Muslim community here to fully consider this as a possible hate crime. When you see a man breaking in with a gun, having threatened three people repeatedly over a course of weeks, and then shoot them in the head, as I mentioned, in an execution style, we've simply found it unbelievable that the police force would have initially dismissed this as a possible hate crime, or at least removed that possibility, minimized that possibility. And so I think the other aspect that the community here is wholeheartedly asking for is for this to be investigated as a serious hate crime.
I want to turn to Dia Barakat in his own words. Along with his friend Ali Haidari, Barakat had started a fundraising campaign to raise money for a trip they were planning to Turkey this summer to provide dental care to Syrian refugees. This is a clip.
My name is Dia Barakat. I'm a dental student at UNC, and I need your help. Have you ever felt helpless about the situation in Syria and felt like you can't do anything about it? Well, this is your opportunity to help. This summer, I'm embarking on a trip to Turkey with 10 dentists to help Syrian refugee students in need of urgent dental care. These kids don't have access to the same health care as us, and their prolonged pain can easily be taken care of with the work that we do. But we need the proper funding. So let's relieve their pain. If you want to make a difference in the life of a child most in need, then I urge you to take advantage of this opportunity. Yeah.
Dia Barakat's campaign had originally set a goal of raising $20,000. It's now raised nearly $200,000, mostly raised since news of the killings broke. So, Professor Safi, could you talk about some of the work that Dia was involved in, both here in the United States, the social justice and humanitarian work here and abroad, as well as Razan and Yusor?
Absolutely. So the very last Facebook message that most of us saw from Dia, and these people are really the pillars of the community here. They're the absolute role models for what it means to live an engaged, faithful life in the public space. And the last time that we all saw Dia in the social media context was he was talking about leading a campaign to provide free dental care for inner city, primarily African American community in Durham, and to hand out free food. And this was just a short while after he had gotten married.
This is the kind of person that he was, open-hearted,
always with a smile, starting his action here at home, but then also with an eye towards suffering halfway around the world. And this is what we ask of the best of our young people, is to connect the suffering here at home to the suffering globally, because we want them to always be mindful of the fact that our humanity mingles together. As far as the other ones, Yusor had also done very similar dental relief work in Turkey in the city of Kilis, and in fact she was about to start at the UNC Dental School in August. And Razan, this extraordinary bundle of goodwill and brilliant young woman, was already recognized for her work in 3D design. So an Arab Muslim woman, a hijab wearing woman, who's breaking ground in a very male dominated world of engineering. And the way that she had chosen to respond to the horrific Paris shootings and the pornographic cartoons mocking the prophet was not by simply engaging the cartoonists at their own level, but she was the artistic visionary and genius behind a project that it's called Optimism is a Lost Sunnah. Sunnah meaning the pattern of the prophet, the example of the prophet. Optimism. I mean, this is what these folks stood for. This is how they had been raised to live their life. And one reason that a lot of us are mourning is that a few minutes of hateful violence, in a sense, have deprived all of us of decades of benefiting from the loving service of these beautiful young people.
Not a normal parking dispute. Yeah.
No, I mean, to go in there, he walked in their house and shot all three in the head. It's kind of, you know, there's something more going on. The father really thinks it was premeditated. We don't know if that's true or not, but there was definitely the prior history between them having problems. And the girl I spoke to, Amira, said when she heard about the shooting, she knew exactly who did it. She had no doubt it was there.
But the other thing is, you say, you know, when you talk about, like, you know, bipartisan kind of rhetoric, I mean, you said he was an avowed atheist that expressed contempt for all faiths, including Islam, had posted passages from famed atheist Richard Dawkins, like Sam Harris's Facebook page, both of which have spewed hateful comments about Islam in the past. And as you say, Dawkins has condemned the attack on Twitter. That's not, I think it's important that you point out, you're not saying Bill Maher or Sam Harris or anybody has blood on their hands, but you're saying this is...
blood on the hand type of thing. That's not like that. This man was pushed to the breaking point. And the question in my mind, frankly, I think people in the Muslim community is, what if you've gotten his gun and shot three, you know, white Christian people? You know, that's a question. Or three... just people who are not Muslim, who didn't look brown and did wear hijab, the two women who were killed wore hijabs. Would he kill them or not? And is that part of the component of what motivated him? I think there's part to it. In my heart, and I could be wrong, but this is my view, if they were not Muslim, they'd be alive today. There may have been an altercation. He may have went and yelled at them again, screamed at them. But to get the gun and kill them, you know, I really see in the media and the narrative by some on the right is that we're not legitimate Americans, that we're a threat. We've had John Bennett, an Oklahoma State representative, literally say Muslim Americans are a cancer that should be cut out of this country. This is part of cutting us out of the country. It's killing us. This is part of it. And then I'm not saying he agreed with that view, but you can't help it. That's all you hear is this drumbeat of negative images, that Muslims are not only an other, they're a threat.
Yeah.
There's a point where we're dehumanized as people. We're legitimately not seen as Americans, as a threat, and perhaps less human. Yeah.
Okay, so hey, this is the Furious George Show. We are cruising through into the latter part of the second hour here, and we've been listening to sounds and speeches and people talking about the horrible tragedy that just happened here with the murder of those poor students, and our hearts are broken. It's a terrible thing that we hopefully we'll learn from. And I mean, geez, we've been trying to talk about the problem with this violence here on the Furious George Show for so long. Seems like it's just escalating and getting worse. So yeah, we're hurting here, and we would love to send out the most warmest, deepest thoughts and warmest wishes to the folks who've experienced loss there. So, Furious George Show, WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carborough, 103.5.
Suspect's wife, who held a news conference Wednesday in an attempt to refute claims her husband was motivated by religious bigotry.
I can say with my absolute belief that this incident had nothing to do with religion or victim's faith, but in fact was related to the long-standing parking disputes that my husband had with the neighbors.
And I also want to turn to the lawyer for the suspect. Her attorney, Rob Maitland, also addressed reporters and suggested the suspect had a history of mental health problems.
Personal opinion is that this highlights the importance of access to mental health care services and us removing in our society the stigma for people to ask for that type of help when they need it.
That's Craig Stephen Hicks' attorney, Rob Maitland. Professor Safi, your response.
I have a couple of responses. One of them is, I find it intriguing that whenever we have a white person engaging in horrific act of violence, the immediate response is to say they're a lone ranger, they're disturbed, they're marginalized, and possibly they suffer from mental illness. When we have people from a Muslim background who are coming, all of a sudden the conversation shifts to a culture of death and an ideology that somehow produces this. And then there's an expectation of a communal apology on behalf of it. Also on behalf of people who deeply care about issues of mental illness, I think it's really important to say that while we do need extraordinary commitment to mental health here in North Carolina, where many of the institutions have in fact been shut down under Republican administration, the association between mental illness and violence is simply something that is not borne out by the facts on the ground. And the second thing that I would say that came out of that really unacceptable presentation yesterday that you just alluded to is that the same lawyer also said that the three victims were simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. They were in their own home. Since when is being in one's own house being in the wrong place? Where are we supposed to be?
A
And before we conclude, I'd like to ask Amira Atta. You wrote in your piece, "My best friend was killed and I don't know why." You spoke about an incident in the fall when you were at Yusor's house, and the neighbor, who is now the suspect in this killing, in fact, who turned himself in, came and complained about the level of noise that there was in that apartment. Could you talk about that incident? What happened that night last fall?
We were invited over to Yusor and Ziyat's house for dinner. Ziyat had made us dinner. We went over there, and this was in the engagement period. We were still, you know, getting to know him and that type of stuff. And after dinner, we were playing a game. It's called Risk. I'm not sure if everybody knows about it, but it's a game that you basically like conquer the world. And so we were getting a little competitive, but we weren't that loud. And the house is like where we were sitting. We were sitting in the living room. Like, there's still another bedroom on one side and another bedroom on the other side. So there's plenty of walls that are surrounded around us. Soon after we left, Yusor contacted us, and she told us, "Didn't my neighbor say anything to you guys when you guys left out?" And we were like, "No, we just left. We didn't see anybody." And she said, "Oh, my neighbor came to my doorstep, and he was holding a gun and was telling me that we were too loud and we woke up his wife." We told her, all of us that were there, it was four of us, we told her, "Call the police. Tell them what happened." And she was debating whether she should or she shouldn't, whether, you know, because she was like, "He didn't really do anything. I don't know if I should make this a big deal. I'm not really sure what to do," that type of thing. And, you know, and she was so nice to him. Like, she was just explaining to him, "You know, we weren't that loud, but I'm sorry. You know, if we were loud, I apologize for that." And I don't know, it was just a weird situation. So on Tuesday, as we're getting all of the phone calls and hearing all of the gossip and everybody's telling us, "Get to Chapel Hill," we had no idea what was going on. As I'm driving down there, I'm thinking, if I thought only Ziyat was dead, honestly, I didn't think Yusor had died, and I didn't know Razan was involved. Driving there, I was like, if Ziyat was shot, the neighbor had to do it. I knew automatically, because I thought immediately, who would do something like this to them? It was their neighbor. She complains about him to her parents. I don't know if he's, how many times he's threatened her. Her dad knows more, but she wasn't comfortable staying there. And she used to always try to convince, you know, one of us, if we finished class at State, to come to Chapel Hill and spend time with her so she wouldn't be alone all the time.
Like, the Muslims are coming, they're here. And it's a subtle thing, like, these foreigners are here, and I might be a liberal on other issues, like marriage equality, that's, and he is on his Facebook page, but there's certain things that rub you the wrong way, perhaps, and it's built and escalated.
And Dean, you know, you point out that, you know, some of this rhetoric has been on both sides of the aisle, you know, and you know, you cite Bill Maher, but obviously most consider him a liberal, you know, on that side of the aisle, but clearly he's, you know, angered a lot of Muslims with his comments. I mean, and this guy, as you say on his Facebook page, he wrote, "Some call me a gun-toting liberal, others call me an open-minded conservative." So
So he's a complex guy. He definitely, if you look, to be completely fair, if you look at his Facebook page, and I looked at it, he likes mostly progressive causes.
We'll be right back.
Muslim students have been shot dead in an apparent hate crime at the University of North Carolina. The victims were killed Tuesday night when a gunman opened fire at a residential complex in Chapel Hill. They'd been identified as 23-year-old Dia Barakat, his 21-year-old wife, Yusor Mohammed, and her sister, 19-year-old Razan Mohammed Abu Salha. A suspect, Craig Stephen Hicks, has been arrested and charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder. Hicks had made online posts declaring himself a supporter of the group Atheists for Equality. The hashtag Chapel Hill shooting has spread across social media, with internet users criticizing what they call a lack of national media coverage of the shooting.
Yusor contacted us and she told us, didn't my neighbor say anything to you guys when you guys left out? And we were like, no, we just left. We didn't see anybody.
Like these progressive TV shows and commentators, he's very adamant about marriage equality. He's an avid, devout atheist. It's a complex person who I think that if you asked him before this shooting, do you hate Muslims, he would tell you no. But at the same time, you live in a climate like in North Carolina, where just a year ago they passed an anti-Sharia law legislation,
right,
where there were no Muslims trying to impose Islamic law. But so the Republicans passed that, and while they passed those laws, there's always demonizing of Muslims going on. We told her, all of us that were there, it was 4 of us, we told her, call the police, tell them what happened. And she was debating whether she should or she shouldn't, whether, you know, because she was like, he didn't really do anything, I don't know if I should make this a big deal, I'm not really sure what to do, that type of thing. And, you know, and she was so nice to him, like she was just explaining to him, you know, we weren't that loud, but I'm sorry, you know, if we were loud, I apologize for that. And I don't know, it was just a weird situation. So on Tuesday, as we're getting all of the phone calls and hearing all of the gossip and everybody's telling us, get to Chapel Hill, we had no idea what was going on. As I'm driving down there, I'm thinking, if I thought only Diat was dead, honestly, I didn't think Yusor had died, and I didn't know that Zan was involved. Driving there, I was like, if Diat was shot, the neighbor had to do it.
I've seen a man killed by his best friend, and lives that were over before they were spent. I've seen
Like, they're coming to get us. They want to impose their law on our country and make America some Muslim country. You cannot be immune to this if you have no counter-narrative. You know, to me, this man is a sort of a test case on someone could be liberal on certain issues but gets impacted by hearing horrible things that there's no counter-narrative.
Well, and again,
you hear another side to it. And you, the father made a good point. I mean, these three people were all shot in the head. They were executed. I mean, it's not a normal crime of passion.
It's not a normal parking dispute. Yeah.
No, I mean, to go in there, he walked in their house and shot all three in the head. It's kind of, you know, there's something more going on. The father really thinks it was premeditated. We don't know if that's true or not. But there was definitely the prior history between them having problems. And the girl I spoke to, Amira, said when she heard about the shooting, she knew exactly who did it.
Yeah.
She had no doubt it was him.
But the other thing is, you say, you know, when you talk about, like, you know, bipartisan kind of rhetoric. I mean, you said he was an avowed atheist that expressed contempt for all faiths, including Islam. Had posted passages from famed atheist Richard Dawkins, liked Sam Harris's Facebook page, both of which have spewed hateful comments about Islam in the past. And as you say, Dawkins has condemned the attack on Twitter. That's not, I think it's important that you point out, you're not saying Bill Maher or Sam Harris or anybody has blood in their hands.
But
I knew automatically, because I thought immediately who would do something like this to them. It was their neighbor. She complains about him to her parents. I don't know how many times he's threatened her. Her dad knows more, but she wasn't comfortable staying there. And she used to always try to convince, you know, one of us, if we finished class at State, to come to Chapel Hill and spend time with her so she wouldn't be alone all the time. So I'm not really sure if that was just a fear, she didn't want to be alone. But I mean, she knew that it wasn't really safe there with that neighbor that tends to come to her house holding a gun. Like, if I had a problem with my neighbor, I might write a letter, you know, put it on their doorstep or on their car, but I wouldn't go to my neighbor holding a gun.
The University of North Carolina.
Join Mrs. Pickens.
Victims were killed Tuesday night when a gunman opened fire at a residential complex in Chapel Hill. They'd been identified as 23-year-old Dia Barakat, his 21-year-old wife, Yusor Muhammad, and her sister, 19-year-old Razan Muhammad Abu Salha. A suspect, Craig Stephen Hicks, has been arrested and charged with three counts of first-degree murder. Hicks had made online posts declaring himself a supporter of the group Atheists for Equality. The hashtag Chapel Hill shooting has spread across social media, with internet users criticizing what they call a lack of national media coverage of the shooting.
don't you want devoted followers?
Breaking point, and the question in my mind, frankly, I think people in the Muslim communities, what if you've gotten this gun and shot three, you know, white Christian people? You know, that's a question, or three just people who are not Muslim, who didn't look brown and didn't wear hijab, the two women who were killed wore hijabs. What if you kill them or not? And does that, is that part of the component of what motivated him? I think there's part to it. In my heart, and I could be wrong, but this is my view, if they were not Muslim, they'd be alive today. There may have been an altercation. He may have went and yelled at them again and screamed at them. But to get the gun and kill them, you know, I really see in the media and the narrative by some on the right is that we're not legitimate Americans, that we're a threat. We've had John Bennett, an Oklahoma State representative, literally say Muslim Americans are a cancer that should be cut out of this country. This is part of cutting us out of the country. It's killing us. This is part of it. And then I'm not saying he agreed with that view. But you can't help it. That's all you hear is this drumbeat of negative images that Muslims are not only an other, they're a threat.
Yeah.
There's a point where we're dehumanized as people. We're legitimately not seen as Americans, as a threat, and perhaps less human.
Of course. She was saying because they were different, she felt that she was hated. And she didn't know why, because she's such a sweet and calm person. She didn't understand why anyone, you know, wouldn't like her. So it didn't make sense to her. And we told her it's probably because you wear a scarf, you wear a hijab, and you are a Muslim. So some people are, you know, ignorant, and they are going to not like you because of what you represent, because people think that Islam is a bad thing. But I mean, not all Muslims are bad Muslims.
Huh. Emirata, we want to thank you for being with us again. Our condolences. Best friend of Yusur Abu Salah. We're going to link to your piece at fusion.net. My best friend was killed, and I don't know why. And Professor Omid Safi, thank you for being with us, director of Duke University's Islamic Studies Center. Today in Raleigh. Again, 19-year-old Razan Muhammad Abu Salah, her 21-year-old sister Yusur, and her new husband, 23-year-old Dia Barakat, all killed on Tuesday.
All right, that's going to do it for us tonight here at the Furious George Show. We're going to be back next Thursday, hopefully have much more pleasant news to talk about. Been some pretty sad things going down here in Chapel Hill lately. So we're going to pull ourselves together, move forward, stand together, and we will return. Thanks for listening to Mike Parr Radio. I'm furious.